But they should be ready either tomorrow or certainly by class on Tuesday. Okay, so when I talk about Gauss's law, what we did on Tuesday was we considered the idea of flux, okay, which we saw was, we talked about electric flux. And this is sort of a definition that we use for electric flux. And we used, by putting in Coulomb's law for an electric field into there. So this is E equals KQ over R squared. Okay. And of course there's an R hat here. But by putting this in here, we saw how we could get a value for a point charge, which equals Q in over epsilon naught. So we had a point charge, and then we drew a spherical surface around that point charge. Okay? So this was the expression that we got. Now, what we actually want to do is go the other way. Epsilon naught? Epsilon naught is 8.85. I mean, it's times 10 to the minus 12 Coulomb squared, Newton meter squared. Okay? But it's in the front of the book. I mean, that's not, yeah. All right? That's a permittivity constant. So, well, okay, this is what we did before. But what we actually want to do is, let's start from Gauss's law and try to use it. And first of all, let's take this case and see if we can get Coulomb's law. So first of all, let's consider the case where we have a point charge here. And let's say that we have some shape from that, yes? Okay. I'm probably going to get wounded here. Okay, so we have a point charge here, Q, and then we have some surface that's around it that is some crazy surface that we definitely wouldn't want to have to integrate over because it's too complicated. Okay? But the question is, I want to know I want to use Gauss's law to calculate the electric field from this point charge. Okay? Now, I know how to do it with Coulomb's law. This is an easy case because I just put E equals KQ over R squared and I have the number. But let's actually use Gauss's law. How would you use Gauss's law to get the electric field in this case? Well, what you do is you have a surface around it and you need to see how much flux is going to pass through that surface. And the total flux that passes through this surface is going to be related to the electric field as given by Gauss's law. Okay? So, well, okay, here, I picked this surface. That's a bad surface, though. That's not a very easy to deal with surface. So let's actually look at this and we say, well, it's a point charge. Again, we have spherical symmetry. Okay? Now, when we have spherical symmetry, all right, and this is R, okay, and what we want to know, and of course we have our little regions, dA vector here, okay, and this is Q, and this whole thing is of course A. All right, so that's the geometry that we have. And we want to somehow obtain this based on Gauss's law. Okay, it's embedded inside of the integral. All right? So the first thing is that on this surface, what do we know about the orientation of E and DA. What's the angle between them? I need you to... Okay, so E is going in this direction. Okay, and DA... Now, DA, remember, is perpendicular to the surface. Okay? This is a very confusing thing, I know. But DA is a perpendicular to the surface. So actually, E and DA are parallel. They're parallel there. If I were to draw a little DA over here, I have the same thing. Because of the shape that I picked, my sphere, E and DA are always parallel. The angle between them is zero. Well, so that's convenient. That allows me to write EDA. It's a scalar product. I don't need anymore to refer to the angle because the angle is 0 degrees and cosine of 0 degrees is 1.0. So now I've significantly simplified life. Okay, I got rid of the dot product. Now, what's the next thing that we can do? And this is harkens a little bit back to what we did a couple days ago. All right, so I'm integrating over dA my electric field. So we don't really know what the electric field is yet because... that's what we're trying to solve. But what can I make? I got a point charge. And what can I say about the how does E vary over the surface? So as a function of where I am on the surface, what DA I'm looking at, how does E vary? It doesn't vary, right? So I can move this out of the integral, right? And then I can say, well, okay, now I'm integrating over a sphere the dA, and so now I just have this becomes the area of a sphere, okay, which is 4 pi r squared, okay? And so if I rewrite this so it's legible, so it equals E 4 pi r squared equals Q in over epsilon naught. And maybe you can see where this is going. If I just divide both sides by 4 pi r squared, I get 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught Q r squared. Okay? That's Coulomb's law for an electric field. Okay? It just drops out. Now, this is the simplest case that we can have because we've just got one point. There's no charge distribution. It's just a point charge. But this is an example, the simplest case example. I'm not saying that it's simple itself, but it's the simplest case you can do of applying Gauss's law to a charge distribution. We've only got one charge. And obtaining... Using it, I mean, Gauss's law is telling you how to calculate the flux. It doesn't look like it's telling you how to calculate the electric field. It looks like it's saying if you have the electric field, you can get a flux. But you need to look at this a little differently. This is a mathematical relationship. And it's telling you the relationship between the flux, the field, and the charge distribution. Okay? So if I know any two of those things, I can get the third one. Actually, turns out, if I know one of these, if I know either the electric field or if I know the charge distribution, it's telling me how to get the electric field, okay? Provided that I can use an area, a surface, that is defined that I can simplify the math, okay? So even though this looks like it's a calculation to give you the flux, usually we actually don't care what the flux is. What we care about is this piece. Okay? So applying Gauss's law is all about trying to get at the electric field based on the symmetry of the charge distribution you're dealing with. And let me say this, Gauss's law is very difficult, okay? It requires a visualization, and it's not obvious, even though I just said it, what the mission of this thing is. Why would you do that? I mean, if again, as I said last time, if you look at Coulomb's law and you look at this thing, it's obvious that this is much more complicated mathematically than Coulomb's law. How is that simplifying your life? And the reason is because in certain geometrical situations, I can see a geometry such that I can use my knowledge of the geometry of the charge distribution to get me the electric field. And there are charge distributions, this isn't one of them, but there are charge distributions where if I had to integrate Coulomb's law and then divide by charge, it would be a nightmare because it's some crazy charge distribution and whatever, okay? So this is the game, is to try to get from this to an answer that has an E on the left side of it, okay? And we'll do that in a few cases today. Now, you can go all the way to Coulomb's law, because this isn't, sometimes we call this Coulomb's law for an electric field, it's not really Coulomb's law. But now what we've said is at a radius R, every point on this sphere has an electric field from this charge Q of that value. Well, now I can say, okay, well, the force equals that electric field times some Q2, some second charge, okay? And so then I end up with explicitly Q, my original Q, Q2 over R squared and in the direction between the two, okay? So this is how you can get Coulomb's law in that case. And that's just telling you what I told you before. Coulomb's law and Gauss's law are inherently the same thing. They're just very different ways of looking at that. Now, one other thing about it is that if I was given a shape like this, somebody said you have to find the shape, you have to find the flux through that shape, okay? I can look at this problem and say, well, I can't calculate this. I can't use Gauss's law or Coulomb's law or anything to figure out what the number of field lines going through that shape are. It's really chaotic. I can't do it directly. But what I can do is say the number of field lines going through this shape are the same as the number of field lines going through the sphere. So I can look at the problem and say, well, okay, yes, you wanted it for this potato shape or whatever this shape is, this pork chop shape, I don't know. But I don't want to deal with that. I'll just deal with a sphere, okay? And then I know, once I know this, I know this, okay? So the other thing to say is that, and it's explicitly here, the shape of the surface is irrelevant. The shape could be this. What is the, you know, tell me the electric field, you know. Okay, let's use that surface. It doesn't matter. I get the same number. The flux is the same. Okay? Okay. All right, so let's do an example, some examples here. So one example is, let's imagine there's a charge distribution. Let's say it's concentrated. It potentially has a radial dependence. Okay, it may be more concentrated at the center and more less concentrated at the periphery. Okay, we have some radius here, R. And the question here is, what would be, from this charge distribution, what is the E field at some point outside of that spherical charge distribution? Well, okay, let's write Gauss's law. Phi E okay, so I'm at some point here. Well, looking at this charge distribution, what shape surface would you choose to draw around that charge distribution to try to apply Gauss's law? A sphere. Okay. All right. Well, I'm not tall enough, but okay. It's a sphere. All right, and this sphere is going to have radius. This is little r. This is big R. Okay? Now, okay, that's great. We've done this twice now. What is the electric field? What is the dependence of the strength of the electric field on different points on that surface? No, the strength. This is the strength of the electric field. How does the strength of the electric field vary as a function of position on that surface? It's constant, right? Okay. Now the other question is, what is the angle? And remember, so there's some, this is some surface. I have some dA here. What is the angle of that electric field with respect to each element dA? It's zero. Okay? So, again, I can get rid of the dot product. And then I can move the E out of the integral. So I end up with this expression here. Okay? Now, I'm outside of the sphere, okay? So, this Q in is, so let's say this sphere has a total charge of Q, capital Q, okay? So the total amount of charge inside my surface is the total charge of the sphere. So, this becomes capital Q, and this becomes 4 pi capital R squared. Okay. I'm going to confuse you if I continue with that notation. Let's use capital R for the radius of the sphere, and little r is my distance from the, you know, where I'm at from the origin. Okay? So now if I plug this all in, I have E 4 pi little r squared equals capital Q over epsilon naught. And this gives me E equals 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught capital Q over little r squared. Q in is just a generic term from Gauss's law. So what is Q in? How much charge is Q in? Well, in this problem, it'll become obvious why I need to make this distinction, but when we do part B of this one. But it's Q in this case, since we're outside of the sphere, is the entire charge of that distribution. Okay? So now you should notice that, well, this looks exactly like this. In other words, I'm outside of this charge distribution, and it's as if all of the charge of this sphere were all at the center of the sphere, as if there was one point charge with charge capital Q. Okay? Right? It has exactly the same feature. Just says I need to know the total charge, and I need to know my distance to the center of the charge distribution. I don't need to know anything about the geometry of the charge distribution. I just need to know, since it's spherically symmetric the way that I did this, I just need to know my distance to the center of that distribution and the total charge. The charge could all be on the surface, it could all be concentrating at the center, it can be evenly spread out, doesn't matter. If it's spherically symmetric, then it behaves as if all the charge is at the center of the sphere. Okay? Just like it was a point charge. Now, okay, that's great. That's fascinating. So now, let's consider a little different case. Let's consider a case where we're not outside of the sphere. We're at some point little r from the center of the sphere. So now we're actually inside the charge distribution. Okay? And I want to do the same exercise. I want to find out what my electric field is in this case. So well, first of all, what surface shape would you suggest to use? A sphere. Okay, because it's still spherically symmetric. Okay. Now, let me think about this problem in two different ways. I have charge inside that sphere, and I have charge outside that sphere. So what is the contribution to the electric field from each of those components? At any point on this sphere, what is the value of the electric field from all of the charge outside of that surface? Anybody want to take a try? We kind of discussed this a little bit on Tuesday, but I'm being a little unfair to you. So I have charge outside of this surface, okay? And I want to know, you know, how much electric field, you know, there's some value at every point on this surface of the electric field. Okay, it has some value. And you could argue just on general principles that that value is the sum of the vector sum of the electric field from the charge inside that surface plus the electric field from the charge outside that surface. So I want to know how much electric field do I feel at this point on that surface from the charge outside that surface? Zero. Because all charge, every bit of charge external to that surface has the same number of lines going into the surface as it has going out of the surface. So all of the charge external to that surface has no effect on the electric field at that point on that surface. The only thing that matters is the charge internal to that surface. Okay? Okay, great. Well, what is the charge internal to that surface? So let's call that Q prime. And what that is going to be is the total charge, Q, times the ratio of the volume of the sphere with radius R prime, let's call that V prime, and divided by the total volume of the sphere. So what fraction of the total volume? Okay, actually, I screwed up one thing here. This now, sorry. What we're doing here is now constant charge density. Row. So it doesn't look like I've drawn it now. Now it just looks like an even charge distribution through the whole volume. Okay? So in this case, I can calculate the fraction of the charge inside that surface is going to be V prime over V. times the charge for the total. So if I do this, it's going to be 4/3 pi r prime squared over 4/3 pi big R, cubed. Big R cubed. Okay? So I'm saying the charge inside R prime, inside this surface, is equal to the total charge times the fraction of the volume of the sphere that's inside that radius. Okay? Just multiplying it by that fraction, that ratio of the volumes. If this sphere has half the volume as the total sphere, then that means it has half the charge. If it has 1/10 the volume, then that means it has 1/10 the total charge. And I can simplify this sum, and so what I get is Q R prime cubed over capital R cubed. So that's what the charge is inside the surface. And with this, I can then go back to Gauss's law, and we can really start at this point here, because it's spherical. All the geometrical issues that we use to simplify and say we can get rid of the dot product and E is constant on the sphere, that all applies to this configuration. And so I can go and I can say, okay, E times 4 pi r prime squared equals, and now I need the charge inside r prime, which is going to be capital Q r prime squared over r, not squared, cubed, over capital R cubed, this quantity divided by epsilon naught. Okay? So I'm just taking this expression, replacing R with R prime, because that's the radius appropriate to this problem, and I'm replacing the total charge in the sphere with the fraction of charge inside the radius R prime that I'm considering. R prime is, it's getting a little messy, R prime is the radius, is this radius. R was the radius we used in the original part A of the problem, going external to the sphere. Does that answer your question? I don't know who asked. No. Okay. So now this is what I have, and if I simplify this, what I get is E equals K Q R over capital R cubed. Okay? Now, capital R is a constant. So what this is saying, actually, Okay? What this is saying is that when you are inside this charge distribution, the electric field actually grows with the radius. Okay? When I'm outside of the charge distribution, it goes down as 1 over r squared. All right? But here, I don't have my r prime in the denominator. I have it up here. I have it in the numerator. So if I were to plot the value of E versus R, well, when R is very small, it's 0. When R is 0, it's 0. And then as I go up, it goes up linearly until I get to some point where I am at the surface of the sphere. And at that point, that equation kicks in. And now I fall off as 1 over r squared, whereas here, so this is proportional to 1 over r squared, and this is proportional to r. Okay? So as I move, so another way to think about this is, as I move out from the center of this sphere, the amount of charge that's internal to the surface at my radius, that's growing. So I get more and more E field because more and more of this distribution is inside that surface. Until I get to the point where all of the charge is inside, and then I'm at a maximum. And then I start going outside the sphere, and now I'm just getting further and further away from the charge distribution. And so it goes down. And they agree at R, little r equals capital R. If you plug in capital R there and there, you'll get the same value. Okay. Okay, why don't I do this for a moment? Hopefully I won't electrocute myself. By the way, have you guys all took Stroinovsky, right? Yeah, did he do his bowling ball demo? Yeah. So my mission in life, I guess did he flinch?
Yeah.
Okay. So my mission in life is to do something more dangerous than him and not flinch. So you'll have to tell me by the end of the semester whether I accomplished that. This is not so risky, although there's going to be, I think, 10,000 volts here. And since this table is not grounded right, we already know that this thing will end up being very charged and it'll be a mess. But in any case, what I want to actually use this for the moment, is to illustrate field lines. So what this is this maybe you can see inside this tube, there's a band, sort of like a fan belt on a car, okay, made out of similar material. And what happens is when I turn power on, there's a roller in here which will cause this thing to slide through the system, through here and here, okay? And it's rubbing on metal up here. And so just like with the rat, the charge is going to come off of this thing, all right? And it's actually going to get, it's going to conduct to the surface of this sphere. So I'm going to end up, this ball is going to be full of charge, okay? As a result of that, it will also gather on these strings. This is almost bald, but it does have a couple hairs left here. And it will go on these strings, and what will happen is it will push the strings away from the ball in the direction that the field lines are actually going. The orientation of the strings will show you explicitly where the field lines are going. You may have seen a demo or something, picture of like a magnet, and you put iron filings around it and they arrange in kind of a certain shape. That's showing you magnetic field lines. Well, this is the equivalent for electric field. And so let's see. I guess it'll work. Okay. All right. And there's one here. Hello. Okay, I think that's entertaining enough. And yeah, see, the problem is, well, actually, I didn't put it on the table. This is not grounded, so the charge won't go away. It's just going to take a little while. Ah, that hurt. Okay, so okay, hopefully I didn't suffer any brain damage. I don't remember what I was going to say. Okay, so that's electric field lines. I'm going to talk a little bit later if I can get to it, but it's certainly in the book. Why is it that charge is gathering on the surface of this thing? It's a conductor. So that's something, whether we get to it in lecture or not, you should understand. Okay, so let's do a couple more examples, and then we'll take a break, and then I'll finish with doing a homework problem or two examples. Okay? So we've been talking about the spherical charge distribution. Well, let's try a charge distribution that lends itself to a different shape. How would we use this? So let's consider that we have an infinite line of charge Okay? All right? So it's going to go off to infinity here. And this has some... let's just consider some length, L, of this. All right? And let's also consider my coordinate system is... This is X, and this is R. So as I go away from the line, I get some R. And so I have some charges here. Just put a bunch of pluses on here. And it's uniform. Okay? Now, we've already talked a little bit about how lambda is equal to charge over length. So this is a linear charge density. But the question is, I would like to know, how do I figure out what the electric field is that's set up by this charge distribution? Okay? Now, there's a couple things that I can do. Now, again, this is all about symmetry. You got to look at the symmetry of this problem. Okay? Now, before we talk about surfaces, let's think about what the electric field is. This is an infinite line of charge. Okay? So, if I have, and it's a uniform charge density, what I can say is that the electric field has to be perpendicular to the line, the direction of the line, or the x direction in this particular case. Why is that? Well, because this is an infinite line of charge. And in the x direction, I have just as much charge on this side of that point as I have on that side of that point. Okay? So the x components of this side of the line, the electric field from this side of the line, cancel the x components from that side of the line. So I don't get any x components to the electric field because this is an infinite line with uniform charge density. Okay? Q over Q left is the same as Q right. And so they cancel out. However, I do have a radial component to the electric field. All right? And I might even expect that as I go far from this line, perhaps the electric field changes its magnitude, gets weaker, for instance. Maybe. Okay? So that's using the symmetry there. So the question then becomes, okay, so that's fine. What shape, what surface has a, how can I ask this without giving you the answer? What shape has a radial symmetry, I can't ask the question properly. One shape that has a radial symmetry is a sphere. Can you name another shape that has a radial symmetry that might lend itself to this distribution? The cylinder. Okay. Good. All right? Why? Because a cylinder has length, this has length. The other ones that we were dealing with, they didn't have any preferred direction. This clearly has a preferred direction. It's not as symmetric as the sphere, but it's pretty symmetric. So what we want to do is we want to draw a cylinder around this thing, okay? And that's our surface. And what we're going to want to do is we want to use Gauss's law basically to calculate the flux through that surface and thereby tell us what the E field is. So Gauss's law is the total flux, is the integral, surface integral, of the electric field over the entire surface, and that equals the charge internal to the surface over the permittivity constant. Now, I can say a couple things here. This, okay, has three pieces. Let's call this face A, let's call the cylindrical part B, and let's call this face C. Okay, so I can actually separate this into E, .da. It's not a closed integral anymore, but it's over a plus the integral over b e dot da plus the integral over c e dot da equals q n over epsilon naught. Okay? Now, for surface A, does anybody want to tell me what E dot dA is? So here's my surface here on the end. It's zero. Okay? So this is dA out here. And there is, so it's parallel to the x direction. And there's no component of the electric field in the x direction. We've already said that. So this is zero. And we can say the same thing about C as well, because dA here is in this direction, is that direction, and there's no component of the electric field in that direction. Okay? So now I'm just left with the integral over B. Now, what can I say about the magnitude of the electric field? We're going to do the same exercise we did for the sphere. What can I say about the magnitude of the electric field? Let's do it the other way around. What can I say about the angle between the electric field and dA at all points on that cylinder? They're always parallel. Okay, so I can get rid of the dot product. Okay, now I can say, what can I say about the strength of the electric field at different points on that cylinder? It's constant. So now I can move the E out of the integral. All right? Now I just have an integral over a cylindrical surface. And so this integral is going to equal the diameter, or sorry, the radius of that, 2 times the radius, I should say, times, it's going to be the circumference of the cross section. So 2 pi r times the length of the surface that I drew, L. Okay? That's the total area. Now, the other thing that I know is that Q in equals the charge density times the length that I'm considering. Okay, I just inverse this relationship here. So Q in is going to equal lambda times L. That's the charge that is internal to this surface. So I can do the replacement for all of these things. And let me just write it. So I've got E times 2 pi R L equals lambda L over epsilon naught. I can get rid of L. Okay. And I won't go through all the steps, but what you get is, one way to write this is 2k lambda over r. Okay? And it's always radial. So I only have a radial component. We already got that out of our symmetry discussion. Okay? So what we're seeing is that here, a point charge, the electric field goes down as 1 over r squared. Here, it goes down as 1 over r. Because this is all constants. Lambda is a constant, k is a constant, 2 is obviously a constant. So with a line charge, the electric field goes down a little more slowly than it does for a point charge or a spherical charge distribution that you're outside of.